SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Wednesday, race fans. Sirius 162, XM 207, Sports on 999. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. I was very irresponsible. I went downstairs to get a cup of coffee. Maybe a little too close to airtime. But we got back as Brian was playing the intro. Good morning, and I mean, just it's Groundhog Day. Absolutely gorgeous, and at Keeneland, hard not to be, as I wrote this morning when I tweeted the link to the pick five, hard not to be focused. It'll take your mind off of the pre-entries, which will be announced at noon. FanDuel TV, TVG, noon for the rundown. Usually takes about, you know, I always get this wrong. I think they do this fairly quickly. I think within a half an hour they'll bang through the 14 races. They slap up the graphic, the body of the fields plus the you know, those excluded based on the decisions of the committee, and then all the assorted downloading and processing will distill out PPs for everybody. You know, you probably, some of you have working PPs. Brisnet has had you know, probables available, you know, to get familiar. We'll talk in a second about a couple of very noteworthy, prominent, I can't even call it defections per se. One horse that, I'll mention the Chosen Vron. Those rumors, they were surfacing the last couple of days that the regulatory vets and the added scrutiny of the Breeders' Cup veterinary team, you'll see them roaming the Del Mar grounds. They deemed the Chosen Vron as unsound, and to the complete frustration and annoyance of Eric Krulejack, who, you know, he only spends every day with the horse. This is a very difficult equation, and it's not going away, and you know, it came up most recently when we talked to Brendan Walsh the other day, and you know, he had, you know, California, what, Santa Anita 4 years ago, with Maxfield, and oh my gosh, it was the turf juvie. But you know, here's a 6-year-old gelding, and I saw some of the comments. Oh well, you know, he hasn't raced much for a gelding for a 6-year-old. He's probably been very what are you talking about? The horse made 7 starts last year. He's made 6 this year. Was about to make his 7th. I think if you saw, I'm sure a lot of you saw Eric Krulejack's comments, and you know, as he said, you know, we're with the horse every day, and he may have a, you know, he may not have the smoothest way of going. That doesn't make them unsound. And, you know, when horses are, you know, at three-quarter speed, half speed, you know, jogging, cantering, they don't, you know, they don't necessarily look the way they, you know, they will at full speed. And this is one of the challenges that horsemen and owners and players are dealing with. Dr. Alday, actually, I had reached out to Dr. Alday yesterday on a couple of other topics, as mentioned, and this equine anemia that has claimed a couple dozen horses. I asked Steve about, and then I saw a piece at Pollock about kissing spines, which is a, you know, a skeletal topic, and happens to be, you know, the spine and the back end, and it happens to be Dr. Alday's, you know, real specialty. He's particularly known for straightening out hind ends. And so I thought I'd have him riff on that. And then this topic, you know, came to a head yesterday. So I'll let Steve, you know, talk about how, what options there are, I guess, to some degree. I mean, how do you convince regulatory vets that, and when it comes to the Breeders' Cup veterinary inspection team, yeah, they don't know the horse. They don't have a, you know, have a regular contact with you know, chosen Vron, and almost certainly, you know, the vast majority of the horses that are coming, you know, to Del Mar. So how does the horseman, you know, how do you explain or you know, how do you convince the regulatory vets? So it's a difficult I would say, you know, outgrowth of, you know, the environment, the hyper cautious environment, which is, you know, which overall, I mean, we can't, you know, this is what makes it so hard. I mean, that there's people that have worked all year to be, you know, in position for next weekend. And you know, here come some people who've never laid eyes on the horse, and they're going to say, "Well, he's clearly unsound. He's lame." No, he's not. So I asked Eric Kruljack if he wanted to comment, and I'm happy to have, you know, happy to have Eric on, and just, you know, feel awful for the connections. You know, how many opportunities a six-year-old, right? You know, yes, they're coming back next year to Del Mar. He'll be seven. So, anyway, one interesting comment. In fact, I'm going to reach for the piece. I think this was at. The one from Blood Horse. And Kruljack said he might look outside the U.S. And as it happens, when Dick joins us in a little bit, we'll talk about the pre-entries, the nominations, essentially, for the Hong Kong international races in December. And I just was, of course, at Turf, but just curious who of the Americans. Yeah, there's a few, including Cogburn, Howard Wolowitz, Izzy Vungu Vungu, who we talked about with Graham Motion yesterday. No balls, one-timer for Ravelli. Clement, both Senbei and Roses for Deborah. First Piece for Glatt, and Big Invasion for Clement. So, yeah, there you go. It just popped in my head when Cruel Jack suggesting they'll take the Chosen Vron outside the country. And we'll obviously, this is not, I'll tell you now, I mean, this is not going to be the last horse that is ruled out by any means. I mean, this has become a regular part of the Breeders' Cup lead-up. But at noon today, you'll get your first feel for the way these fields are going to shape up. And here, in fact, here I'll go ahead and read this. We have to live with it, Cruel Jack said. We'll keep our cards close to our chest for now. We might send him out of the country. I don't want to expound any further on that, on where. In any case, we've had a great run with the horse. You can't fight City Hall regardless of how ridiculous they are, which made me smile. I've had this horse since he was born. He's 100% sound. He's had some issues way back as a three-year-old. We did surgery, cleaned up a stifle. Had nothing but a dead sound horse ever since. He's never taken a bad step. Soundest horse I've ever trained. I know my horse. He's sound. He's just got a funny little way of going. They interpret that as lame, but he'll go down there and go 108 and change every time. And you look at his record, that is confirmed. So, change is obviously a serious impact to the sprint. And there was also a tidbit that I saw from Team Gosden. John and Thaddy Gosden, and of the two filly and mare turf candidates that had been intended, it seemed, Friendly Soul is not coming. Emily Upjohn is set, but no Friendly Soul. Who would absolutely have been, in fact, I think on Brad's line was top of the chart, if I'm not mistaken. Coming off the Prix de l'Opera win, so no friendly soul, and of course American related connections here with Augustine, George Drawbridge. But nothing wrong with Emily Upjohn. Don't have to feel terrible by any stretch, because Emily Upjohn is quite solid. Third in the Prix Vermeil, so that came in September, and of course Blue Stocking went on to win the Arc, and she was chasing Blue Stocking home. So it'll come together later this morning. A few other news and notes. Sale note. I'll probably bring up a little sale stuff with Sid in hour two. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus brought to you by Hillandale, and that's a timely mention because literally, The catalog's actually downstairs. With a couple of hips left in the session yesterday, the Stone Street the Stone Street bred Curling Co. that went through his hip 108, 550,000. They had a very, it was very good, a little bit more, a little higher energy yesterday at the sale, and a few more, you know, nice numbers. It was a good day yesterday, and two more days. They're at the halfway point, and 544 through the ring, 28,750,000, an average of 52.8, median of 20,000. Actually, the buyback plummeted to 20%. Yesterday brought everything up quite a bit. 10 more sellers over 300,000, and on that front, in fact, they're way up. Yeah, 15 in 2 days. First 2 days last year, 10 sold for 300 or more, 15 so far. And this Curling Colt to Mark Breen, Alistair Roden signed. There was a nice variety again. And in fact, I saw a nice little aside from Jessica Martini about the Bromans. And wow, it's different to see. They went to 350 on a Tappet Colt. Instead of saying agent for Chester and Mary Broman, it just says agent for Chester Broman. They're still looking for a Derby horse. Good day yesterday. And another charlatan again had the highest first crop purchase 2 days in a row. $300,000 colt. And who'd that go to? Where is it? Where is he? Because it happens to be a favorite. It's out of the Hollywood family. There it is. Summerfield offered up, and Jones Everett signed the ticket. So we'll see what see if Sid's got what kind of thoughts Sid has and what he's hearing as well from the sale. What else? We've got a doctor all day, I told you. Dick Powell shortly here. And hour three, a lot of handicapping. We'll get Seth in, and we'll see what I'm sure Seth has looked at the sequence at Keeneland. What I ended up doing, I did something I haven't really done that often. I provided two different budget options. I laid out a main ticket and a backup that would come in right around 200, and then a $96 ticket. Actually, take that back. $72 ticket with a $36 backup as a little cheaper option, and of course the all A. You got the all A's option as well, which I put together for $36. So $36. Basically 108 and 200, but I'm sure there's people that are about, you know, Seth and I both operate under a that you know, bet a little, win a lot concept, and I know there's people that'll put in, you know, you'll see big bulbous tickets posted online. You know, and this actually is probably a good opportunity because it's not an easy sequence, and that first leg in particular, I'm anxious to hear what Jeremy Plonk will be with us too after the scratches after 11:30 once he's finished his revised play and revised decisions. We'll see. You know, we might get, maybe we'll get some help from the scratches. I don't know. But Seth and Jeremy in hour three, and we'll see what their thoughts are on the sequence. This thing is gonna be 2 million. So it might be a good place, you know, if you've had friends that you've gone in with, this is the kind of, you know, that, all three of these days, actually. I finished writing up, I haven't put the plays together, but I did make final decisions for Belmont as well for tomorrow. And I haven't approached the Santa Anita races yet, but will. And it's kind of crazy that we have these three, you know, these three big carryovers. So if you've ever, you know, if you've thought about, you know, going in with friends, this is a good opportunity. I mean, to expand your reach. If your budget is, you know, let's say 100, you know, and you got some friends that, you know, you that you that you have a good enough relationship with that you can make decisions together, that can get dicey sometimes. But you know, if you've got friends that are casual players, you know, put 100 in, you know, you make your money go further, because there it does feel like a sequence that is going to produce some prices. I think it's almost impossible, you know, that you're going to get five straight, you know, first or second choices in this. Would be surprising, let's put it that way. And especially because the first leg, you know, that claiming group, especially because that group just, I on that bigger budget, I set it up so that I've got six covered as A's and B's, three A's, three B's, and then the other four horses as C's. I mean, it's that, it feels that treacherous, you know. And once you get, frankly, once you get to six horses out of a 10-horse field, you're basically saying to yourself, you know, I'm not confident of anybody. And I don't, the hammer, you know, I let, hammer is big on the all button. I rarely, over the years have, you know, pushed it in multis, but this happens to be the way this is structured. And because it's a 50-cent increment, this does feel like a place where you may, in fact, want to make sure that you at least get to the second leg of this sequence. So, yeah, to give you a specific on the bigger budget, I've got four A's, two B's. Then so basically six by two, by four, by three. So that would be, the base ticket would be 144, and then I've got a backup ticket with those four uncovered, you know, the other four horses in the first leg, and that's a $48 backup. You know, just, no matter what, you get at least to that second leg. So that was the thought. It's a fun, I thought it was a very fun, I'm sure you heard, you know, if you were listening just now, to yesterday's replay, you know, you could tell Nick and I were having fun. And then I revisited later with Nick. We were going over some Thoroughgraph, you know, looking at the Thoroughgraph, you know, the sheet, you know, what would amount to sheet plays. And we were both, yeah, we kind of pretty much agreed. But just the fact that, you know, it was funny, just the fact that Nick, there were horses that I you know, was not crazy about in that first leg that Nick liked, and then like he said, I talked him into using CFV Bullet, the Hernandez horse in the first leg. I mean, that's a garish number. I mean, he's brought five horses in the last. The Thoroughgraph stats are, I want to say, are they 3 years or one, or 18 months or 3 years. I think 3 years. And he's come to Keeneland with five horses. He's won with three. Come on. If he's coming down from Chicago, it's with purpose. So and from a figure standpoint, he's competitive. CFV Bullet, very tricky race to start. What hopefully is lucrative for all of us. We can all win. You're all winners. we're all winners, right? That's the idea. If you can hit any of these three, that's the best part, right? That you could fund your Breeders' Cup action with any of these three carryovers, ideally. And there's good racing Saturday too. So we'll be down at all. I will be down at Aqueduct. I'm going to do the same thing I did last week. Leave like at 3:30 and get down to Aqueduct and looking forward. It's a tough spot. Not that it's a tough spot. It's a fair spot for Landauer. I'm just looking forward to it. I did the finalized selections, and you know, like I said to Andy and to Nick, how do you? It's very hard when you have a horse. You have a horse that you're involved in. It's hard to, you know, to be clear-headed and not to be a little biased. But I mean, he obviously is a fit. There's five or six horses within, you know, two lengths of each other, basically. And then the next group of horses. It's a tough race to end that pick six tomorrow in New York. So, but that'll also be that'll be fun and a ticket building exercise, as we say. All right, Dick Powell's joining us here presently, and we'll look ahead. They're at Chatin today, as opposed to Happy Valley, and let's pull up. I put out the pick three that Dick is offering. The fifth is running now, and is it over? Dick, good morning.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. This is over, right?
Yeah, what happened was before Rood in the gate, they had to back him out. They scratched him. Zach Burton was limping around pretty good. So they backed a bunch of the horses out. So they're probably 5 minutes now behind schedule. So, yeah, they did run the fifth, and number six won it. So Treasure. Nope, sorry. I'm looking at the wrong way. Sonny Dowling.
Yeah, the three.
Collins, yeah. They're a little bit behind schedule, but the club is continuing to work with a video provider. So they added on Jackie Silks to the screen. So on the left side, you got the program number, you got Jack Silks, you got the name of the horse, you got the odds. Across the bottom, they got the win odds, you got the payouts, the double payouts. So very, very good work. It works. And it's a big step forward for American bettors to try to follow up on that.
Well, and I was about to ask you, because the graphic graphic is very different. The the border, and it's got DRF graphics attached, and we did talk about the enhanced tie-in with DRF.
Yeah, no, it looks good, and I got Andrew Champagne will come on certain minutes supposed to give his analysis, but then they post his four choices in the lower left-hand corner, and there's still plenty enough room for the video, so it works very, very well.
very good. Well,
and I'm guilty of. I look at the Hong Kong website. So the problem, but the issue is a 4-1 in Hong Kong is a 3-1 over here. Now the 4-1 is going to pay $8 in Hong Kong. The 3-1 is going to pay $8. And it's just that includes the state, and in America it doesn't. So it's 3-1 plus 2 is 8. So I'm always trying out the Hong Kong odds, which to me are easier. So, but these odds are American odds. These are not the plus 1 Hong Kong odds.
Well, this will be a slightly new experience. All right. After several years of getting used to a different, a whole different layout. We'll concentrate on the. We'll just worry about the video on the race running, and we'll focus on the. We'll focus on the program instead. Dick, let's. We're actually just 14 minutes to the six. So let's get ahead of it and lay out the pick three.
Okay, race six. We're going to go 1,200 meters. Now today, all the races are on the railroad track, so no turf racing today at shot 10. And then the change in schedule, we will be racing the normal early Sunday morning spot. But the racing will be from Happy Valley. So we'll have Happy Valley racing Sunday morning. So the Shotgun Turf Course gets a nice rest. They're working on it, believe me. They're not leaving it alone. So all-weather racing today, Happy Valley racing early Sunday morning. Race 6 is setting up 1,200 meters, box 36 stone. Very wide open race, Steve. You just opened the bid. How many high single-digit odds horses? There are right now. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 single-digit horses in this race. I went with 4 of them. Actually, 3 of them. 170. The one Golden Long is the high rate, and he's rated at 60. And the next highest rate, the 2, is rated at 54. So he seems to have a big edge. He has got a little bit extra weight, but he's in good form and just had been running Class 3. Now dropped back down to Class 4. So I had to throw him in number 1, Golden Long. Number 3, Regent Glory, has good experience on the all-weather track and a couple of good performances coming in. So this is going to start off well. He should be fit and ready for David Hayes. We get 7 pounds off with Ellis Long. Number 4 is Akapala from David Hall and Alexi Bedell. Riley from way back last time. Probably do the same thing today. And number 5, Jolly Companion, Man for Man, and Brittany Long. This is a 10-pound apprentice woman rider who's doing off to a good start. And she had a win aboard this horse last time that one. Got it up involved early and was able to win by a length. So Brittany Long comes back on number 5, Jolly Companion. So first leg, 1, 2, 4, 5. The second leg, the Spy was a big stick out in the betting. Talent's Ambition, it's an intimate mischief, running on the all weather, so certainly has pedigree to do that. Has a win to finish up last year and started out this year, rallied from fall back with a third, so the normal second up improvement should be enough. But I threw in number 11 here, Satirical Fan. I just can't leave the horse out, and he's a monster price. He's 30-something to 1. But he's by So You Think out of the Giant Causeway mare. He has really good speed, and we get in super light with Brittany Long. So we're scheduled to carry 120. We're only going to carry 110. We have speed. From post 8, I think she's going to send the horse because these races, they start up near the turn, so you got to go. And this horse does have speed. I don't know if she's going to hang on aboard him, but I love the pedigree at that price. I'd be kicking myself if I didn't. So I did. And then the last leg are back to 6 furlongs, Class 3, good group of horses. Here, I went with the 4, Super Wind Dragon, Chris Sell, Zach Curtin, scheduled arrival, we'll have to keep track of. Jack's rides in the upcoming races. He was working okay, but he was limping when he got hurt in the last race, in the gate race 5. So we're going to go Super Wind Dragon. Good win last time out on September 15th. Picks up 5 pounds off the win. That's normal. I think he has a chance to do it again, especially from a good post. And number 7, Self-Improvement, right now 15-1. Another horse with a lot of decent speed. And if you look, his last two starts, he broke from post 14 and post 11. Today he drove post 7. So big post position relief for number 7, Self-Improvement. And then number 10, Kai Ying Cheer. Another Brittany Wong horse that just makes a lot of sense. Drove the rail. She can get it out. I don't think it'll be up to the lead, but can save ground. And once again, 10 pounds off. So she's in this race with 106 pounds. So she's in with the feather against, the high rate of 135 pounds. So that's like a four-go quiet little table to step into that season number. So 4, 7, 10 in the last place. So 1, 3, 4, 5, whip, 5, 11, whip, 4, 7, 10.
Very nice. 4 by 2 by 3, and we're less than 10 minutes away. Certainly going after some nice numbers here, getting it started. 5-1 on Golden Long, 11-1 on Regent Glory, 7-1 on Acca Power, and 5-1 on Jolly Companion. Very nice.
But look at the board. I left out the 8, 6-1, the 9, 6-1, and the 12, 9-1. I mean, it's a handicap race. You get this a lot with the rates. You know, someone's better than someone, but with the rates, they're not that much better, so the betting kind of equalizes. So this is a tough race, and I heard you mention the all buttons before. I know you, on the one hand, you say, well, got to use the all button, it's wide open, but then what if you use the all button and you get a 6-1 or 7-1? You got to be hoping more than 10-1 if you hit the all button. So well, there's no prohibitive favorite that we're trying to beat. There's a lot of horses we're trying to beat, but the prices aren't that high.
This is as crazy a board, though, Dick, as you may ever see anywhere. There's nobody lower than 5-1. If you put a line through Family Fortune, Casper Founds, no less, 40-1. Other than that, everybody else is under 20-1. This is as crazy a scenario. You've got basically 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 horses between 5 and 9-1, and you know we always say that when you get 3 horses that the public, you know, when they're within a $1.50, let's say, of each other, 7-2, 3-1, 9-2, that's the public saying they can't make a clear favorite. You know, that's a place to reach for prices. This goes beyond that. There's one outsider here, technically, based on the odds.
Yeah. I saw it this morning, and I write down the current odds on the HKJC website for the 3 races in the pick 3, and I'm like, Jesus. Like, I have to be careful because I write, if it's below 10, there's a decimal, so it'll be 9.8 or 6.5. And like, I'm like, I got to make sure I'm doing this right, because I could mistakenly think a 5-1 is 50-1, something like that. And I just sort of like, Jesus, they're all single digits. They're all high single digits. The market can't make up its mind. And still, with 11 minutes to post, it hasn't tightened up on anybody. In fact, it's spread out even more. There's now the co-favorite 1-5 or 5-1.
Well, and you know, Dick, maybe we can take advantage of this for a second. And let me go to I had the form guide up earlier, but let me go back to it. And there we go. Is there anything in the form guide that under this scenario that stands out that gives somebody, you know, a particular edge? I mean, maybe just, you know, pick out even amongst the four that you picked. I mean, what is there in here to differentiate the selections from, you know, from other horses who are getting plenty of consideration?
Well, it's a different racing show, so not everyone has experience on the Ouellette. Now, to be honest, most of the horses have their barrier trials over the Ouellette, so they most of them have experience over the Ouellette as shot 10. But that said, not everyone has racing experience. So, for instance, the one, Golden Long, he's the highest weighted horse, and yet he's never raced on all weather, where the three, Region Glory, has had seven starts on the all weather and has won twice and comes into the race in good form. So that's an edge, a good pose. And there also this crazy thing, Steve, with the apprentice riders, the three and the five. My research over the years has shown that with these apprentice riders with big numbers, 7 pounds or 10 pounds, it favors sprint racing. Now, intuitively, you might think, well, the longer they go, the more important that weight off is. Well, yes and no.
No, sprint racing, it's the start.
Get out of the game. Yeah.
It's the start.
So just go.
They would explain that years ago.
Yeah. So I've seen it with the Ortiz brothers, various apprentice riders, even at Prescott, Brooke Bays, she does better in sprints than two-turn races, just things like that. So this is a sprint, and that's why I threw in both Ellis Long and Brittany Long. They're both on legitimate contenders. But, you know, you just think they're going to do great in distance races, and they do, but they do better in sprint races. So I threw in 3 and 5. The 4, Aqua Power, doesn't have much speed, has good experience on the old weather. Will be coming from far back. I'm not crazy about that, but in this race, you can't figure someone's going to get out there and walk the dog. It should be quite a scramble, so maybe it sets up for Aqua Power. But then I'm leaving out, you know, 5 other contestants that just can't play them out.
Well, and I'm glad you mentioned, in terms of the surfaces and the barrier trial, one thing that is also worth noting, you look at Golden Long, and that CTC is the training center, as opposed to either Happy Valley or Sha Tin, HV and SD, obviously, Happy Valley and Sha Tin. But those barrier trials were that Golden Long, coming off the layoffs in spring, occurred at the out at the training center.
Yes, that's like 3 hours away in Shangfa, and almost always on turf. I don't know if they have the track. They probably do. But most of the barrier trials are on turf. Speaking of barrier trials, the other day they had a barrier trial, and it was at Happy Valley, and it was going long. It was like 1,800 meters. And who shows up? Romantic Warrior.
I saw this.
And Master Sovereign, the winner of the Ancon Derby, who getting back into form and starting a trial seriously, and we'll probably see him on November 17th. I was quite the barrier trial. But two monster horses come into the same trial, and they both look great. Master Sovereign, Romantic Warrior, raced up on the pace from Master Sovereign, was way back. One thing I noticed with him, Steve, when he gets up near other horses, he pins his ears back, even a barrier trial. You can see how competitive he is. So I think they take him just to the back of the pack to keep him under wraps, and they want to ride a little fight amounts. I mean, he wants to go. So he's had two barrier trials, both at a distance, finished up both of them in great form. And we have a bunch of big races coming up on November 17th, and those races will serve as probably final prep for the Longines races. And the Longines races is even more in the news now, with Kanying Rising winning the Premier Bowl Sunday morning for David Hayes and Zach Purdy. 107.57, almost the track record set by Sacred Kingdom years ago. So he ran a gigantic race in a series of gigantic races. He started the year out 108.03, carrying 135 pounds. This race he carried 129. California Spaniel had to carry the high weight, and he was third. It was just a terrific race, but Canyon Rising just killing it. So he'll be well respected. Helios Express, who was great last year in the 4-year-old series, he finished up from 13th and got up to second in the photo. All the California Spangled Beauty Waves was right in it. So it was a real strong race, but Canyon Rising is not only getting better, he's a Southern Hemisphere 3-year-old. So he is eligible for the 4-year-old series. So David Hayes' plan is to run him in November, go to the Longines Sprint in December, and then stretch him out to a mile in the first leg of the 4-year-old series, see how he goes there, and whether they'll continue on with the mile race and the mile and a quarter. But they bumped his rating up to, I think, 127. I mean, he's spectacular. So he was just the superstar of last week's racing.
Well, and I mentioned earlier I actually printed them out, essentially the nominations for the IR, the international races, and North American participation, because they've actually segregated the Canadian-based runners that nominated as well. We've got 2 minutes, and let's check back. Golden Long, there's really been no change here. Golden Long, 5-1. Regent Glory, 10-1. Acca Power, 7-1. Jolly Companion, 5-1. There's no moving this board. People are just as confused as they were 7 minutes ago.
Well, they couldn't make up their mind then.
They haven't got any closer.
But it just shows you how strong Hong Kong racing is. It's not so much the individual horses in the handicap races. It's grouping like horses with like horses. And then the weights bring everyone even closer together. So this is a great example of Hong Kong racing. This is most every race is similar to this. This is a little bit exceptional. But as a better and as a handicap. Wow.
For those that just joining and you haven't had a chance to see the play on Twitter, 1-3-4-5 with 5-11 with 4-7-10. 1-3-4-5 with 5-11 with 4-7-10. As they continue to warm up. And, you know, Dick, we got a minute per se, so maybe I don't want to. I'll introduce the conversation, and you can maybe you know, reflect afterward. The situation with Luann Machado last week happened after, you know, we were together on Wednesday, and so you haven't opined, but I mean, a lot of people in discussion of the circumstance referred to, you know, similar kind of a miscue in Hong Kong specifically, and what kind of a penalty would be typical there versus what ended up being what really does seem like a light 3 days and 2,500. So I am curious about, you know, your thoughts. I would have reached out for Pat Cummings, but we only have 3 hours a day to discuss things. I'm sorry, I couldn't resist.
I know you couldn't, and you did. Last year, I can't remember who it was. but someone got a big penalty for not riding a horse out. And when you watch the race, you're like, I don't see it. You got to watch it again. Well, right at the wire.
Right.
And the horse won.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, half a stride.
Yeah.
And they said, no, no, you're right at the race. But I agree with that. Now, this wasn't lack of effort. This was just, you know, bonehead play.
Yeah.
Garrett Wilson letting the ball bounce off his shoulder pad. My touch, you know, just an error. So, yeah, I thought it would be more. How do you even, in today's, and I'm watching football and I'm watching every night the horror show that the NFL is. And then you see a horse will finish a second at Athletic and get post money out or whatever they did to cap non-starter. Even though he ran second, and you could have had the exacter and all sorts of exotics with the horse in second. I don't know how anyone can explain or defend that. So, stewards, wow.
I was there. I was there for that race Thursday. And in fact, Phil Linguini and I and Chris Griffin were talking about it, and you know, Chris kind of was like, you know, didn't have nobody. It was I'm surprised actually that didn't get more conversation. That I think got overshadowed by the Machado conversation.
But see, unfortunately for New York, it's par for the course.
Well, the funny thing is, though, Dick, and it was weird. I mean, usually those non-starters, it was a horse who had their, you know, their whole race essentially, you know, compromised. An assistant, you know, the hand gets caught in the bridle or whatever, and compromised the horse, and so you're getting. The benefit, and New York is very good when it comes to declaring non-starters, the most liberal jurisdiction there is on that topic. This was unusual because of where the horse finished. Oman, let's go to this three-quarter, the Tai Yu Young handicap.
$1,200, race six. First leg of the late triple. They're off and racing in a great line. Jolly Companion's going to look to do what he did last time, and he's going to roll straight to the lead over Flying Dragon and Robot Knight. Fourth is Cosmo Navigator from Region Glory. Aka Power closer today went off the rail. On the inside is Holy Power, and wider is Golden Long from Lightning Bolt Strive for Glory. So Treasure second last, and Family Fortune last of all. It's Jolly Companion with the red ribbon in the tail, leading by two. Second Robot Knight and third Flying Dragon. And then came Regent Glory racing in between horses with Cosmo Navigator around him. Wider is Golden Long, two lengths to Wacker Power. And then came Lightning Bolt, Holy Power, Family Fortune, and the last two, So Treasure, and also Strive for Glory. Jolly Companion's trying to run them off their legs again. He's three over Robot Knight, Golden Long, Regent Glory next. Jolly Companion gets to the 200. He's got big problems from Robot Knight, then Golden Long and Regent Glory, but Robot Knight has charged away here, and he's going to give Pierre a race-to-race double over Golden Long and Aka Power, and Robot Knight too good, beat Golden Long, Aka Power.
Well, Dick, that was too bad. I thought that Jolly Companion was cruising pretty comfortably, but a perfect trip by the winner, who was also 5-1, Robot Knight. Andre Etseni with the call.
Yeah, I like what Brittany did. She put the horse on the lead and little quick first quarter, but still she had the horse falling, and that's fine with me. The nine was very good, and the one got on track late, but no real movement from anywhere else. No threatening movement, any. So,
9-1-4-2, and nine ends up the winner ends up this Robot Knight, who's a 4-year-old. I thought the way that Jolly Companion made the lead without much ask, I thought that, you know, was going to have every chance to to wire, but pounced on and no answer for the winner.
Nine kind of got the perfect stalking trip, you know.
Yeah, he did.
Brittany made the lead, and Nine just sat off and waited and bided his time. No one was up pressuring him. So he got the, not the garden spot, but pretty close to it. So, yeah.
All right.
So what did the nine go up? What was the final odds?
5-1.
That kind of proved my point. If you hit the old button, you got 5-1. It was a head scratching race, and we'll move on.
You mentioned the female bug, and it prompts mention today. There'll be the media conference call, and the interesting lineup after the pre-entries are announced at noon. Aidan O'Brien and Chad Brown, the trainer guests on the call, and then Rachel King. We've gotten to know a little bit about Rachel King because she's one of Callie Francois' good friends, and that's why Callie went to Royal Ascot, which was for Rachel's wedding, and they got very close when Callie was working in Australia, and Rachel's going to be the first Australian-based rider to come to the Breeders' Cup. She's going to ride that Setono Carnival in the juvenile turf. And she's on the call.
Yeah, and she's not an apprentice rider, Rachel.
She's been around 10-plus, 15 years. Yeah, she's 30-something.
She was terrific. Big race in there over the weekend, Caulfield Cup and Everest Stakes, the world's richest turf race. And I watched as much as I could. I watched as much Champions Day as I could. The Ascot was really wet. Number one, I don't think you're going to see many Champions Day horses in the Breeders' Cup, although we did see Found win the Breeders' Cup after running on Champions Day 2 weeks before. But what you have to be careful of is when you're doing comparisons, like, for instance, City of Troy, and the horse who finished behind City of Troy didn't run well Saturday, but it was the track. I mean, the track was, they had to move the surface to the inner third. So don't fall for that trap where you look at a form comparison and say, well, he almost beat them, and then he came back and ran. Well, some of these horses came back and ran that because of the track conditions that were there on Saturday. It was fall racing tends to be that way, whether it's France or England. The summer is usually firm and fall is usually soft. That was softer than normal, but I enjoyed the races. I was all upset Saturday, and the first race, I gave him two long shots, and naturally, I don't bet the right long shot, so the other long shot runs second, and Keys a $105 back, and then the third race that he asked me to do, race five, I played the long shot, and he was kind of in behind horses. He tipped out. I needed at least get third, because I think he was 7-1 in the place pool, and he couldn't do it. But he ran well. But Shadwell winds up winning the big race that Bailly could not win. So I think it was Anmott. I got to print it up somewhere.
Anmott, yeah.
He wound up winning the Champions Day race that Bailly unfortunately came up short in. So nice to see Chadwell get a little vengeance. But just, they're all terrific races. Just the ground was what the ground was, and you're going to race outdoors. It's going to happen. Although not in Saratoga. Can you imagine if Saratoga would run September, October? You would have had Fast and
Right. The whole thing. Yeah, exactly. For 2 months.
78 degrees yesterday. What's that?
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Today, today's like the last day of it, but still, man, been spectacular. A beautiful fall. All that. And lots of good racing, and today we get the pre-entries, and that'll be fun.
Well, and we'll start everybody that's involved with our At the Races Breeders' Cup betting companion. We'll get to work, and you're gonna do the all turf again, right?
You didn't have me on the list there, so I don't know what I'm doing.
I thought you'd do the same that you did last year. The last cup, the all turf pick four.
Dude, you're forgetting you're talking to a moron, so you
better
like kind of make it
quicker. Well, by the way, before we wrap, and actually it'll be a good segue over to Sid, because we got to slip in some baseball. I'm sorry about the Metsies, but boy, the Fernando Valenzuela news overnight. Really, very sad.
I enjoyed watching him. Just the whole, you know, the windup and everything. Just,
yep.
And he was terrific. He was so entertaining. Fun to watch. And it was real good. And, boy, 63 years old. The older I get, I'm like, the first thing I look at is how old is it? I turned 73 Saturday. So,
well, happy birthday, and many more.
Well, we haven't gotten there yet, but if I do make it to Saturday, I'll be 73.
I'll take the over, Dick.
Assume nothing.
Well, I mean, with the World Series starting on Friday, I mean, it you know, the proximity to the series start, and you know how it's going to affect Dodger fans. I mean, and how important, frankly, he was to the franchise. You can't under dramatize. What his arrival and his just it was just the, for those of you that are, I mean, I don't know, I guess if you're 40 or younger, you cannot imagine the sensation that the start of his career was. It was the craziest thing there's nothing even to compare it to, really. He just so burst on the scene. I mean, he wasn't even supposed to be the opening day starter. And Lasorda reached for him when Jerry Royce couldn't go. And that, you know, throws a complete game shutout and proceeds to go 8-0 with five shutouts. I mean, it was the craziest thing. And you know, when he arrived in New York and what that did to, you know, to sort of hyperventilate you know, when he came to Shea. I mean, it was just amazing. Yeah. And you know, I don't know how much people know about, you know, the Latino relationship between the Dodgers and Los Angeles, but it was not a cozy relationship until, you know, because they basically, you know, the neighborhood, Chavez Ravine, and you know, it was not, you know, the Dodgers were not well received, let's put it that way. But then when Valenzuela came, it changed everything for the franchise that way. I mean, they'd only been in, how long had they been in L.A. at that point? 15 years?
Yeah, 15.
24 years.
Yeah.
20, yeah, right? 57, 58
to 81? But he was must-see TV.
Yeah.
It was just insane. The only thing I can compare it to in a different vein was Jeremy Lehman, that one stretch for the Knicks where you had to watch the game and he's beating Kobe Bryant and it's just like, oh, what is going on? And for like, you know, 10 games it was insanity. It was just unbelievable. So,
well, yeah. That was I don't think that you can really that doesn't qualify the same way, I don't think. But well, Hershiser's right. The shutout streak.
Yeah. But the great thing with Fernando was the windup, and he's looking up at the sky, and not even looking at the batter.
he was
just fantastic.
Yeah.
You just had to watch. Yeah, obviously stayed up later back then, but at 62 years old, man, that was a shock.
Yeah, it's tough. He's a year younger than me. Well, 2 years, because my birthday's 4 weeks. Actually, I think it's 4 weeks from today. Well, I wanted to bring it up, given you know, and you got to be. I'm sure you're very pleased with how the Mets acquitted themselves overall. So, well done.
Yeah, just playing baseball on October 20th, 19th,
right?
Whatever. You know, that's fantastic. You know, and we kind of snuck up on it. We won. The one of the high expectations of the year, 2 years before, when we won 101 games and then got knocked out first round. So we just kept winning, and I thought we had a big shot to win game six, and then who knows if game seven, but the Dodger bats were hitting on all cylinders. And, but it was fantastic. And then, World Series doesn't really do much for me, but I watched the NBA last night. I'm an NBA guy, but the World Series will be good. It'll be really fun to watch, and for any baseball, for any fan of anything, go back and dig up clips of Tommy Lasorda cursing. It's the greatest. You die laughing. Not just the cursing, what he's saying about different people in the
well, the best. I mean, the one is the Kurt Bavakwa, the Kurt Bavakwa tape is the greatest. And when I was pitching, and I faced hitters like Bavakwa, I'd send a limousine. Because I'll strike that crowd every time.
Oh, God.
Well, and the Kingman. What was your opinion of Kingman's performance?
But
what was my opinion of his performance?
But he would start out like the first 30 seconds. He's trying to hold it in, and then he can't.
No, like, no. It's the greatest.
That's Tommy, one of the few people in the world that did not of Sandy Koufax. He had this big problem with Koufax. And it was very personal because Sandy was a bonus baby, so he had to be put on the major league roster. And Tommy was the guy who should have been on it. And Tommy wound up playing Triple A for way longer than he should have, because Tommy was a really good pitcher. So everyone else, you know, me included, go on and on about Sandy Koufax. Tommy Lasorda.
Well.
Little wrinkle there. My last thing will be, I hope he both passed away. Okay, I get it. But I'll never forget what Mickey Mantle said about Pete Rose. Mickey said, if I went up to the plate and hit that many singles, I'd wear a dress. he apologized for it, but he couldn't, you know, he got out there and he said it. And that was Mickey, you know, unfiltered, and it was, I'll never forget that one. But that baseball, I'm so sure, is waiting patiently for me.
Well, he's going to certainly have to kick in on a little bit of on a little baseball thought too.
Yep.
All right, Dick, I appreciate it, and we'll be talking to you from Del Mar next Wednesday.
Yeah, I get there Thursday, but I don't know if I can do Wednesday's show, no problem. I can't get to the track that morning because I'm staying in San Diego, and
okay.
I'm getting driven, you know, with friends, so I don't have a car. I like sitting there, but that's unfortunately.
No problem.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Well, we will talk before I see you then. Thanks a lot, Dick Powell, everybody, and HKJC. If you want to, try that late double 5-11 with 4-7-10, I think Sid Fernando's right there, in the, coming out of the bullpen. Sid, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
We were finishing up with. I had to bring up because you know Dick has been living and dying with the Mets. But the news last night, the Fernando Valenzuela passing, I mean, kind of...
Yeah, it's terrible. I mean, he's our age, too.
Yep, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
What a, you know, in baseball, you get some pitchers that kind of transcend the sport that every man can, you know, kind of identify with. And is outstanding, and so he fit all that. He kind of checked all those boxes. I mean, you know, physically, he wasn't the best physical specimen. He had that screwball.
Yeah,
and he was a character, right?
Yeah, he had a big personality, and. He came along at a fabulous time for the franchise too.
Yeah, and he pitched a no hitter
later on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I saw the fact that there's a clip of the last out with Vin Scully, and being our age, and you know when he burst on the scene, like I said to Dick, I couldn't remember anything like it, Sid. I mean, it was such a sensation. I mean,
I caught a lot of some of that stuff because the term Fernando Mania started to get applied to me a lot.
That's there you go. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Uh-huh.
Well, and, you know, you and I, you know, being just old enough... And you know, having been born, you know, shortly after the Giants and Dodgers went west,
right?
And you know, with the Mets' arrival, of course, in Flushing, and uh-huh. I imagine that you know you grew up on that same you know Yankees Dodgers culture,
yep. Oh, yeah, yeah.
That I did with my father, who was a mammoth Dodger fan.
Yeah.
Until they left.
You know, the funny thing is, in Brooklyn, not too far from where our house, our co-op was in Park Slope, was the old Dodger Field, and they still have, to this day, the home plate is still there.
Abbotts Field Apartments.
Yeah.
Yeah. I took Tina and Spencer. I took them to go see it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's such a different. We've talked about this. I mean, those players lived in the neighborhood. They'd come back from games and sit on the stoop with their neighbors.
Right.
They were so woven into the culture in Brooklyn. What they did, Really, you want to talk about, I mean, the way my father talked about it, I mean, and what I've read, and anybody that's read any Roger Angel and Boys of Summer, understands. Well, it's no different. It was no different when the Colts were spirited out of Baltimore.
Exactly. And, yeah. Yeah,
and the Browns.
That I remember as well, very vividly.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the last big quarterback for the Colts before they were taken out was Burt Jones.
That's a good question, actually, right at the end.
Yeah.
Well, they were ingrained in the community. Same thing with the Browns, and of course the Browns' connection to Baltimore is strange. But you know what's funny about this, Sid? Maybe you would know better, because I didn't live in the city as a kid. Yeah, you know, uh-huh. We lived more in Great Neck, and then we moved to Connecticut. But I don't sense there was the same. There was the same emotion tied to the New York Baseball Giants, and when Stoneham, when Horace Stoneham
absolutely
moved,
absolutely not,
right?
Absolutely not. Yeah, you can't even compare it.
No,
no.
Well, that of course the Yankees. You know, having the Yankees in the Bronx is a part of that. They took priority.
Yeah. They did, and you know the funny thing is that you know you were so right in the going with the Yankees power, because we did not come up, you know, with the Mets. It was always the Yankees after that, you know. But it's very borough sensitive in New York too.
Did you ever go to the Polo Grounds?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah, I never got there. I never got to the
By the way, speaking of the Dodgers, just as a link, you know, some pitchers that I've always, for me with the Dodgers, Fernando, obviously, but, you know, little known or maybe little remembered, but my all-time favorite pitcher, and again, another pitcher that didn't have that physique, but in the opposite way, and that was young Pedro Martinez. Of course, he was with the Dodgers for his first couple of years. He came up totally the opposite way, 139 pounds, throwing gas, right? And it just, both those guys, the two guys I really enjoyed. Pedro, of course, was my all-time favorite, but it's funny how the Dodgers, you know, had that influence on me.
Well, and you know, you mentioned the early Martinez. I mean, for me, I was in Montreal when he
He went from the Dodgers to Montreal.
Yeah, and
the Dodgers didn't think he'd last because of his physique.
And then he filled out.
Right.
He was so much fun to watch.
He was fun to watch all throughout his career, because even at the end, like when he went to, well, at the end of the Red Sox, and then even recrafting himself with the Mets, when his fastball went, you know, his arm slot changed, he was still able to get by. Instead of that 96, 98 fastball, he could still get by with that 89 fastball because of that changeup. And that was like watching an aging fighter, you know, use every trick in the book. He no longer has the power, but he has the savvy, you know, to be able to use whatever tools he has. And, of course, Pedro's changeup was always outstanding. But, I mean, I remember seeing, you know, you're supposed to, the effectiveness of the changeup, just by what it means, is that it changes speed from the fastball, right? So you have to throw a fastball and then a changeup. I've seen Pedro throw 3-4 consecutive changeups in a row, which is crazy.
Now that first, you know, his Cy Young Award season, the first of them, in Montreal that year, and I just pulled up the stats because I was curious. 13 complete games.
Yeah. Great.
13. Four shutouts.
Yeah. Yeah, you got a chance to see the real Pedro developing, you know.
He was, that whole team, that strike year was tragic. I mean, what they did to that city as well. I mean, that was engineered by Major League Baseball. They
exactly.
They absolutely stole that team from the city. They were 70-44 when play was halted.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. The team was so good. Oh, my God. I had season tickets. I had a 40-game plan, and you didn't even need them, and you could have gone any day for nothing. But my buddy Dave Kaufman and I went. I don't know how many games we saw. We'd see easily 30 games a year minimum.
Wow. Yeah.
It was so much fun. Have a toasty, Frank. You got a steamy or a toasty? For the Montrealers know what I'm talking about. Two different kinds of hot dogs, either soft and fluffy, or grilled on the pressed down on the grill, like panini style.
Right.
That's
right.
A toasty.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you learn something every day. No, I didn't know that.
Well, you know, when they were even more famous, the Toasties were even more famous at the Montreal Forum at Canadiens games. And when they moved out of the Forum, there was like a sale sold everything out of the building, and the grills, these old tabletop grills that were the concession stands.
Yeah.
What people wanted the most, especially restaurateurs around Montreal, they wanted the grill because the grills were 20, 30, 40 years old, and they were beautifully seasoned.
Oh, wow.
And so there was a demand to get those, the grills to make the grilled Frank, the toasty.
Wow, that's great. Yeah. Can you imagine the seasoning on those grills?
Right? Because you can't, and it was funny, because in the new building, when they went into that Molson Center, which I think now is the Bell, I think it's changed names a bunch of times already, but when they went into the new building, the Franks weren't the same. The Toasties weren't, they weren't as tasty.
They weren't as good, yeah.
Nope. All right.
You know, when we moved down here to Tampa, I insisted on Cynthia bringing my cast iron.
Of course.
Because it's been seasoned for so many years. And it's just not the same. And
no.
Same thing.
It's funny you bring that up. Tina's been sick. Now it's going on 2 weeks because of the grandkids. We had the birthday party.
Oh yeah, that always happens.
It's on. Well, and she's a school teacher, so I mean, she historically, I mean, she's plenty used to this. But the grandchildren are right up in your face. The whole day. And she has been sick now. It's into a second week. And so last night she was up all. I've been up since 2 a.m. And but one of the things I was doing laying in bed, I happened to watch a video. I guess it's I probably was Instagram, but the reconditioning of cast iron. There's like a whole genre, Sid, of people that they find them at flea markets and antique shops and, tag sales.
Yeah.
And they're rusted and they're all crusted up. And, they put them in those tanks and they attach, positive and negative ionization.
Right.
And it all comes off, and then they re-season them.
Wow.
It was really cool. I just saw one this morning at 3 o'clock about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting because I've always maintained that a cast iron, I mean, you just, it's worth its weight. Every year goes by and I'm looking at my cast iron right now. I mean, the thing is so damn heavy.
Yeah.
But I would, you know, it's the only thing to cook on.
I've started to use mine more. I've had one for a while, and for the longest time, all I really ever made in it was cornbread for Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. But I've done some steaks for Tina now. Not yet because we're still hell. The way things are going, we'll be grilling in December here. It's the craziest fall ever. How gorgeous it is. Anyway, all right. We
it's grand.
We've been all over the place. Obviously, next week we'll be knee-deep in Breeders' Cup. We'll get, you know, you'll pick out some spots.
We don't really have too much else to talk about this week.
That's true, I guess. There's been a couple of... we did touch on it, I think, the last couple of weeks. I mean, there's been this steady parade, Sid, of... you know, retirement announcements, essentially, you know, the three-year-old situation, and with every passing one, people lose their minds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, people go insane about it.
Is there... Well, we discussed this... We discussed this through the prism of Tony Kovitz and his conversation with Rapoli. Gonna be joined. Actually, got another. It's not a similar topic, but we've got the veterinary issue that is going to come up here shortly with Dr. Alday. We're going to talk about, and I have heard back from Eric Kruljack regarding the chosen Brahman. And I'll discuss that with Dr. Alday. I mean, from a classic standpoint, Sid.
Yeah.
Is there any? I mean, obviously, you know, any classic winner. You know, adds to their value. The classic, however, has had a kind of a mixed bag, hasn't it? In terms of the winners and what it meant to them as stallions.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously you win a big race like that, and it adds a lot of credentials, and it's all great. But you know, there's you can't just use one example of, oh, everybody's being retired now without understanding the entire landscape. You know, when you had more people that were owner breeders, horses were kept in training longer. As you've had a diminishing number of owner breeders and more owners coming in for the ROI, that changes. That's had implications. As owner breeders have diminished, more people buy horses at auction because they're not breeding their own horses. So when they spend millions of dollars on horses, they want to get the return on investment. And they're not into the breeding, so it's more prevalent that they're going to sell prospects. You take a look at a bunch of horses coming out of the Baffert barn. Arabian Knight for his client Amr Zadan is going to stud. National Treasure is Preakness winner. He's going to stud. Moot is going to stud. Prince of Monaco is going to Claiborne. There are others too I can't think of besides those four, but I mean that's a big a healthy return for the investors that, you know, bought these horses as yearlings to give to Baffert to make into stallion prospects to go into stud. And that's people have to understand that that's what their MO is. You take a guy like Chuck Pipke, one of the few guys left that breeds his own horses, races them. He's got a horse going to stud this year. That's Cheryl's Fight. But Cheryl's Fight is 7 years old. He's a grade one winner, but he's a winner, grade one winner on turf, and he's going to go to stud. And there's, you know, it's only going to be Mr. 50 owning him. He's not a syndicated horse, and, you know, he's not going to be as a big commercial prize as some of these other horses. So back in the day when you had more people that did own their own horses and breed and raised the horses they bred, it was a different paradigm. And it's all kind of related, so there's not one answer that, oh, these horses are only make six starts in a year and they're going to stud. Yeah, I mean, that's what's happening. But with the with these new owners, as they came in, Churchill Downs capitalized on the momentum and really made the Derby, quote-unquote, like a Super Bowl event, the premier event. And for these new guys, financial industry guys coming in, whatever, it's a prestige thing. And so the, it was geared towards just winning the Kentucky Derby. And so when you have so many different elements in the game sharpen you towards certain goals, and then once you win the Derby or whatever, then you can have a stud prospect and go to the farms. I mean, it's not the same as a guy like 50 who will run his horse at 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7. But that's an owner breeder profile. It's not a Avengers profile. That's that ownership group that sends horses to Baffert. They spend a lot of money buying yearlings, and they're looking for two or three to cash out to pay for the entire lot and more. So, you know, it's very difficult when I see guys using stats to prove a point on Twitter when they don't address the entire history of what's happened. And of course, it gets a lot of, it's clickbait. It, you know, invites outrage, and outrage spreads on social media, and, you know, the writer becomes a big hit, but it's not addressing all the underlying issues of what's changed in the game.
Well, and that's, you know, honestly, that's true of, you know, it's true of so many of these topics and so many of the, you know, the things that, you know, seem to vex the game. You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's just so many factors involved, and it's all, you know, interconnected. And plus, I'll mention too that I get a sense that there's certain things, there's certain topics that are discussed where the people discussing it don't really understand the mechanics.
Sid's phone line dropped.
I could tell. I see people discussing the Kentucky Downs bonus money, and there's conditions that are involved in those kinds of monies when when there's state government that, you know, authorizes, I mean, if it's, you know, in this case, gaming funds that are directed, you know, to purses and so forth, capital, New York, purses and capital improvement, it's not discretionary money. So, you know, people acting, you know, why aren't they using the money, you know, here? And well, because the money is already accounted for. It has to go into certain areas. It's not discretionary money. And I mean, that's just, you know, that's a sidebar example. But, you know, there's so many intricacies, and it's one of the things that we like to do, and I'm proud that the show does, and we're going to do it next, actually, with Dr. Alday. I mean, we got three topics.
I'm done. Dr. Alday is coming on. I'm good.
All right. Thanks, Sid. We'll do Breeders' Cup next week. There's Sid Fernando, right, everybody. Yeah. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hill and Dale. Let's go to the break, Brian, actually. And, you know, there were three things that came up this week, the last 2 or 3 days. And I, you know, put them all together, and Dr. Alday is going to walk us through. You know, it's a very complex business. This is not, it's not easy pat answers for, and I understand people would prefer that. I mean, if there were easy ways to, you know, to respond. And, you know, to be fair to critics, you know, the industry has had tons of missteps over the years. I mean, so many terrible decisions and misunderstanding of what the core business is. And that certainly frustrates participants, you know, players first and foremost. And I'll give you the original terrible decision. Here, we'll limit it to after World War II, post-war, as they say. Racing deciding that it didn't want to be on television. That if the game was put on TV, it would take away from attendance. That famously in the early 50s, when the television industry, you know, came to racing, said, "Do we want to put you on TV?" "No, no, thanks." Very clever. I think TV is a fad. who was the executive, right, that said, it'll never take? And it's funny too, because racing had an instant, actually, I mean, very quickly, even with black and white, even before color, Native Dancer was a ready-made star for racing and television because he was gray, and he was easily differentiated on the screen. The Gray Ghost, right? Yeah, he was the first. He was the first racing's first TV star. But yeah, the industry did not take advantage of getting aboard television broadcasting. Let's take a break. We'll come back. Dr. Stephen Alday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Luberson and Reborn. Second half. Stay with us.